Welcome, everyone. This is a very special day because I think it's the only major festival in our calendar where we don't fast. So everyone is much happier on this day for some reason. And it's not without significance. It's not that it's just by accident we don't fast on this day, because they kind of left out the time of fasting. But actually, Govardhan Puja is much more significant than just another holiday where we eat a lot of prasadam. It actually has to do with the very, well, maybe even our survival for right now. Because I remember the first time I went to New Vrindavan, and it wasn't called New Vrindavan, this was 1969. The two devotees who at that time, the only sannyasi in the movement was Kirtananda Swami, and another devotee, his name was Hari Griva. And they went to this place in West Virginia in order to, what we call bloop. They wanted to get away from the devotees. And you couldn't pick a better place to get away from the devotees, and everyone else too, which was New Vrindavan. In any case, they went there, I guess they had a change of heart, and they told Prabhupada they wanted to surrender. So Prabhupada came there, and I went there also with another devotee named Jagadish and a devotee named Bhakta Bill and his girlfriend Irene, who later on became Bhagavan Das in Krishnavamati. And we went there, and when I went up to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada was living, he was staying in the attic. The attic was just big enough to put the bed, and Bhakta Bill and myself, we squeezed in. And the first thing Prabhupada looked at me, he smiled, he said, "So, how do you like our jungle?" And he started to laugh. And it was a jungle. It was actually a jungle in Vrindavan. It was one of the most austere experiences I had up until then. Because it was right after the rainy season and everything was mud. At that time we didn't wear shoes because they were, for one reason or another, I guess everything was considered Maya. We had to hand in all our regular karmi clothes when we moved into the temple. I guess they gave it to the Salvation Army in order to save us. So we didn't have any karmi clothes, we didn't have any pants or shirts, and we had to surrender we didn't have shoes either. We had tongs, bathroom tongs. Which is not bad in the summer, but it was very cold it was very inconvenient when the weather went below 30 degrees, and we were staying outside 8 to 9 hours a day doing Harinam. My feet got a little cold. Luckily, we didn't surrender all our socks. In any case, first, New Vrindavan was not possible to actually enter into because the road was all mud. So they had to stop the car around 3 or 4 kilometers before where New Vrindavan was. So the first step I took into the mud, because I didn't know where we were going, you know. They just left it off and said good luck. And first step I put into the ground, my tongue sunk around a foot into the mud. And when I tried to take it out, the tongue broke. Which is rather inconvenient when you don't have any money, you don't have shoes either. And you have around 4 kilometers of mud to go. Anyhow, it was easier to go without tongues. So that, when Prabhupada looked at us, looked at me and said, "So how you like our jungle?" I was thinking, wow. And to bathe, they had what was called Agasura Ghat, which is appropriately named, because you wake up in the morning And you climbed down the mountain because the ghat was rainwater that had filled into the valley. So you climb down the mountain, you get, and then you take a bath. But unfortunately, because you weren't completely dry, when you went back up the mountain, you got all this dust on you, and which turned into mud on you. So you actually wound up dirtier when you went back than when we came down. But the nice thing about it was that I was always wondering why they keep on repeating this verse. That was all they talked about. And by the time I was, after 7 days in New Vrindavan, I realized what this verse was all about to a much greater degree. In any case, after I saw Prabhupada, I went to the shack, literally a shack, just big enough for Kirtananda Maharaj to be in. And he looked at me, and he said, oh, Prabhupada's been telling us, in order to solve your economic problem, all you need is a little land and a cow. So as I mentioned before, as soon as I moved into the temple at the beginning of 1969, I immediately got two services. One is I became the treasurer, and the other I became the head pujari. And there was always a problem because we had no money. This is the history. We had no money because we had no one who was contributing except for one devotee, the temple president, Rupanuga, and he had a job. And then I was trying to figure out how can we actually solve our economic problem if we bought a cow and some land. In any case, I didn't figure it out until around 20 years later. But the fact is, a modern civilization is based upon, more or less, animal killing, especially killing the cow. And when they're killing the cow, they're actually killing civilization. Or as Gandhi said when he went to England, he was asked, what do you think of English civilization? And his reply was, I think it would be a good idea. So we're imagining we're living in a civilized society, but actually it's far from the ideal civilized society. At least so far, no one is eating each other. But that's not so far away. When people get hungry enough, everyone looks pretty delicious. But actually, civilization is based upon the cow. And this festival shows that eternally, on the highest platform, cow protection is the source of course, they don't need economic development in the spiritual world, especially in Goloka Vrindavan. But the development of bliss and consciousness depends upon, well, even in the spiritual world, the cow is the center. Krishna, his only job, and he's had it for a long time. He never quit the job. He never collects unemployment insurance in the spiritual world. He's been working the same job eternally, so it must be a good job. So anyone else can work, do a job, even a service, eternally. So Krishna is doing it, and that happens to be cow protection. And from the cows come all kinds of preparations, and that keeps everyone busy in the spiritual world. Even Srimati Radharani, she has the same jobs eternally. And all the gopis. And it's all centered around the cow and the bull. Radharani is churning butter with the gopis. Keeps her in proper form. Mother Jasoda churns butter. The bulls are farming. Even Balaram has a plow. He's a farmer also. Krishna is a farmer. Radharani is a milkmaid. And we're electrical engineers and lawyers. Microbiologists. Epidemiologists. Virologists. We're so many things, except for what's actually important. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Anad Bhavati Bhutani Parjana Anasambhava, that all living entities subsist on food grains. So we've just taken it for granted for so long that we don't have to actually become farmers. Oh, it's really low class, putting your hand on the earth, getting it dirty. Immediately you have to get this antiseptic and wash it off. It might have a germ in it. I was told, though, in Slovenia, they're not so much germ phobia. And I've noticed even the children, you know, they have their hands in the ground and the parents don't freak out. Oh, you're going to get sick. The germ's going to kill you. I see the germ. It's coming for you. That here people live, there's a lot more trees here, I think, and ground. And so people are not so much paranoid that there's some germ lurking around somewhere, in the ground especially, that dirty ground. The thing that grows fruit, my God, I don't even know if we should eat the plants, it's in that dirty ground. Wash it 100 times. But actually it's the ground that actually is the source of all nourishment. That's where all the seeds are planted. And if there is no ground, basically there won't be any seeds. And even if you do this hydroponic, whatever it is, still it depends upon seeds and sun and air and light and so many different things. It ultimately depends upon nutrients, and the nutrients come from the ground. So this whole idea of technological, industrial development, and this is going to actually bright new world where we all become machines, is just a nightmare. Because what is Krishna and Balaram, what is Srimati Radharani and the gopis, what are they doing? Why aren't they working in a factory there to economically develop? Because what they're developing is their relationship with each other. Their whole center is developing loving relationships. And the part of that is the cows and the bulls and all the other animals. So everyone else in Vrindavan, it's all complete. And here Krishna has manifested this world and the one food which is given out of love, the only food given out of love. Even if you go to an apple tree and you pick the apple, the tree doesn't become ecstatic. Oh, I love you. Please take my apples. Take another one. I feel so good when you pick my apple. No, the only food given out of love is milk. And therefore, in this story, the story begins with the Krishna discouraging the Brahmins are engaged in worshiping Jagya to go to the heavenly planets. And Krishna sends the cowherd boys to get some prasadam because they're hungry. So even these Brahmins, these Yajna Brahmins, even they know that they have to perform sacrifice. And part of that sacrifice is they offer food. Nowadays they have some sacrifice and they shoot off. They have some ritualistic ceremony and there's no food given out to anyone. Well, they fire firecrackers and fireworks and everyone's hungry. They dress up and they pretend that they're God. And they have some music which is like all in glorification of themselves. And then everyone goes home hungry and envious. Why are these people God? I should be up there. But in the Brahmins, they were performing yajna, and they're offering this delicious food, and Krishna sent the cowherd boys to go get some food, because actually they were hungry. Of course, Krishna is never hungry, but he was hungry for the love of his devotees, especially the Brahmins' wives. So the Brahmins refused Krishna and Balaram because they were not transcendentalists. They were followers of Kamsa, or at least they were afraid of Kamsa. But the Brahmins' wives were loving devotees of Krishna, and when they heard it, they put together all this wonderful prasadam that was offered at the yajna, and they brought it to Krishna, Balaram, and their cowherd boyfriends. Now, Krishna was discouraging the idea that you have to worship the demigods, that the Brahmins, they actually realized after their wives became, because they were pure devotees, they had realized they made a mistake by rejecting Krishna and Balaram. But because they were not pure devotees and they were afraid of Kamsa, they didn't go in order to surrender to Krishna and Balaram. But they still felt remorseful, at least, about it. Now Krishna comes back. He's 7 years old at this time. And he sees his own father and the cowherd men are about to worship something. They don't know what's going on. Of course, Krishna knows everything. But the relationship in Goloka Vrindavan is that Krishna, or even Gokula Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't usually come off as the knower of everything. It would spoil the whole relationship. So he manifests himself as a little 7-year-old boy and gives very intelligent inquiries. You know, what is this yajna for? He asks his father, Nanda Maharaj, what do you expect from it? Now that's a very important question that Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj. What do you expect from what you're doing? Most people don't, when they have no intelligence, or they've lost their intelligence, they don't think about what will be the results of what I'm doing. That's called prayas. They just do it spontaneously. The whole world is moving on impulse. They don't know what they're going to get. But Krishna is very intelligent, so he asks, what is the result going to be? Even if it's a religious ceremony, like a sacrifice, big elaborate ceremony for Indra, Indra Pooj. So Krishna said, what do you expect from it? So as it gets down, that they happen to be agriculturalists, they're fixed in cow protection, and Indra supplies rain. So Krishna, he tells him, don't worry about the rain. The rain's going to come anyhow. And indeed, Krishna proved himself to be absolutely right. They didn't worship Indra, and there was plenty of rain. As a matter of fact, there were much more rain than they expected. So Krishna is always right. Even when he preaches atheistic philosophy, somehow or another it turns out to be right. So Krishna, he gives the example that rain falls in the ocean, it falls on rocks, and no one in the ocean is worshipping Indra. In other words, although it appears to be atheistic philosophy, the actual philosophy is that if you worship Govardhan Hill, you worship me, because Govardhan Hill is my expansion, you worship me, you follow my instructions, everything will be there, including, most importantly, protection. Protection from sinful reactions. And as a result, everything will come. That if you worship me, anas chintayantomam ye jana paripasate, tesham nityabhyuktanam yogashemam vihamiham. That anyone who's constantly meditating upon me and worshiping my transcendental form, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So Krishna said, give up this demigod worship. but instead worship Govardhan Hill, at which he manifested himself as a deity. Krishna manifested himself as Govardhan Hill. And Govardhan Hill, as the gopis say in this, in one particular verse which is on here, he says that he's Hari Das Havarya. He, Srimati Radharani says, Govardhan is the best of all the devotees. Why? Because they give grass to the cows, they give places for pastimes for the coward boys and for the coward girls, they give all kinds of, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. So this is all that's necessary. All this technology, all these cars and the computers and these satellites and this technology that now that even if you cough, it's recorded. How many times you cough? You cough too many times and an ambulance comes. And you disappear because they do so many tests on you. It takes years to figure out what's wrong with you. So these things are actually not necessary, but this, what's shown here is that when the residents of Vrindavan have this wonderful festival and distribute prasadam to the Brahmins and to the cows and to the, all the residents of Vrindavan, including even the lower classes, including even the dogs get prasadam. Everyone gets prasadam and everyone's happy. Just like, everyone came here, maybe you came here to hear a few minutes of the lecture, but if we decided today we're going to have a long lecture for a couple of hours, unfortunately there's no prasadam. On Govardhan Hill, there'll be a hill made out of clay, and if you're hungry, you can take some of it. It's offered clay. We probably have a few less devotees. Watch it on the internet. So they're standing underneath the hill. Krishna lifts the hill because Indra is angry, tries to show how he's the boss, that if you don't worship him, you're in trouble. He supplies them rain anyhow because he has nothing else to offer them. So he offers them rain in a bigger quantity than necessary. But then when he sees that Krishna couldn't care less for him, actually initially when Krishna saw Indra was inundating Vrindavan, his first impulse was to destroy the heavenly planets. Krishna has a temper also sometimes, especially when his devotees get attacked. So he's going to destroy the heavenly planets, but he thought, well, no, it's so insignificant, it's not even worth my effort. So he said, well, why don't I just lift Govardhan Hill? So he lifted Govardhan Hill, and Govardhan Hill was in ecstasy. Everyone was in ecstasy, because now Krishna was surrounded by all his devotees for 7 days and seven nights. Usually they feel separation. Even Govardhan feels separation when Krishna comes back in the evening. But now everyone's with Krishna for 7 days and seven nights, and they're so ecstatic in their loving relationship that no one really needs anything. They don't need sleep, they don't need food, they don't need anything. They just need their loving relationship with Krishna. So everything is actually a background for loving relationships with Krishna. Everything else is just the decoration, which is important in Vrindavan, because the cows give milk out of love, the Govardhan is there out of love. Everyone is in love with Krishna, and everyone, whatever they're doing, is out of love. And when we come here, Krishna is expecting, in the human form of life, the same kind of manifestation. In other words, simple village life, where the cows give milk out of love, the ground is tilled, and the food is offered to the deity with love. That Krishna is the center and everyone is performing sacrifice for Krishna. That everyone, whether it be the Shudra or the Vaishya or the Kshatriya or the Brahmin. Everyone is fixed in cow protection, protecting the consciousness of the people in general, so that the cow protection is part of Krishna consciousness protection. That people don't have to work like a dog and eat like a hog, have sex like a pigeon, and defend themselves like a tiger, and declare themselves to be advanced in civilization. And write history books glorifying all the wonderful things they did to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. No, actually, it's demoniac civilization. It's less than animal civilization. That real civilization is based on sacrifice to Vishnu, and sacrifice for Vishnu is based upon protecting the cow and the land and the people and making sure everything is there for sacrifice, just like it's there in the spiritual world. And any deviation from that is simply degradation. It's not advancement. It's actually civilization is degrading itself. So now Krishna's arranged it, because it's not the end of Kali Yuga. If you really want to see what degradation is, just wait around a little. And you'll get a good understanding what it's like when you have no cow protection. When they ate all the cows, and the only thing left is eat each other. Luckily, we're only into 5,000 years in Kali Yuga. Otherwise, in just another few decades, you know, I saw one, to bring in a kind of a mundane subject, but it's relevant. When I was younger, we only had three channels on television, and one of them didn't work. You tune into it, and it's all static all the time, so, you know. But even static, when you didn't, you know, it's kind of exciting sometimes. So they had two channels, so our choices of television programs was not so variegated, which was good. We had I Love Lassie, which is about a collie. It was really innocent. When you wanted to shoot someone, when they shot someone on television, they went bang, bang. There's no blood. There's nothing really you could get excited about. But there was one show that was a favorite for everyone. It was called The Twilight Zone. And in the Twilight Zone, one of the episodes was about these aliens coming from outer space, landing on Earth, and they have a book. And the only thing they could understand about the book, it says, how to serve man. That was the only thing that they were able to interpret from the book. So they thought, wow, finally someone has come and they want to serve us. So everyone, and they had a spaceship to go to their planet so they could be served. Then finally, one of the important people on Earth decided he'd go and get served on this planet where the aliens were taking them. And he's going onto the spacecraft. And his secretary runs up and says, stop, don't go onto the spacecraft. We've interpreted the book, and it's a cookbook. He tried to escape, but they kind of forced him to go on the spacecraft. Ooh. He got served. So that time is coming, Prabhupada said. The only thing that stands between us and the end of Kali Yuga is to create civilization back again. Our chanting of Hare Krishna is not, part of it is to create civilization again so that people can start on the path at least towards Krishna consciousness. In previous ages, worshipping Krishna by chanting the holy name didn't necessarily bring you back to the spiritual world. It got you to the position in Kali Yuga where you get something to eat. And if they kept on killing the cows, kept on killing the animals, and as we can see, the result of that, they started to kill their own children. And then they start killing themselves, killing each other in order to eat. Because if you don't perform sacrifice, you perform sinful activities, then the result is there's no rain. And if there's no rain, there's no grains. If there's no grains, you have nothing to eat except for each other. So we may not like the fact that presently in this particular time period, there's very inconveniences, lockdowns, masks, things like that, other things. But actually, this is arranged by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to stop people's sinful activities, to become more conscious of what actually this modern civilization is all about, and hopefully the devotees wake up a little bit, so we realize that we have to establish what Prabhupada tried to put into practice. It wasn't that Prabhupada just came here, he had nothing to do, he sat in the park and chanted Hare Krishna, and it was a good tune, caught on, a few other people joined him, and then he decided, well, you know, let's do a few other things, like make Varnashram and have a few farms here and there and have Gurukul and whatever else and good luck. It wasn't that these were little hobbies that Prabhupada had brought in. They're actually essential for survival. At least it's survival as human beings, so there's just some opportunity to not go down and become less than an animal. So whatever Prabhupada began with, as he said, even if you can't improve it, at least maintain it. So that means we have to go back, we have to reestablish cow protection, we have to reestablish Yajna Vai Vishnu, chanting the holy names, we have to reestablish Gurukul, where children are trained to become human beings, which means that they are trained to accept the Veda culture, so that the cow is not looked at, you know, as a future meal, but as one's mother. Now, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the Qazi, and after the Qazi tried to destroy the Sankirtan movement, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the Qazi, why are you killing your mother and father? So the Qazi was shocked. He said, we're not killing our mother and father. He said, yes, you are. The cow is your mother. She gives you milk. And the bull is your father. He gets the grains. Now, when you kill the bull, then you have to have tractors. And therefore, to get tractors, you have to get the oil and the machinery. And this is the beginning of the demonic civilization. To get that, then you have to drill into the earth to get oil. And so many things happen. Now, if they didn't do that, because it's not necessary, actually, because you can make cars and you can make things run with water. There's enough technology. But then if you did that, you wouldn't be in control. But if you kill your father and mother out of lust and you eat them, then what is the actual reason you're doing it? Because you get pleasure out of controlling it a demoniac way. There's no necessity of killing the cow and the bull. You just leave them alone. They don't really, all they do is eat grass. I mean, who else eats grass around here? But because of the demoniac desire to lord it over and kill and enjoy people's flesh. It begins with the cow and the bull. And then you create this demoniac civilization where people, you're forced because of your sinful activities to drill into the earth to get oil and establish this technological, mechanistic, industrial society where people would have to work hard just to get something to eat. And it just creates more and more lust and greed and anger, and finally, people just look at each other as the more you fall into the mode, one falls into the mode of ignorance, then the more one becomes crazy and destructive. And again, the only way out of it is to reestablish Veda culture. It's not a question, even if they invented things, you know, with water, just run on water, still, they'd still be killing the cow and the bull, and then they'd kill each other over the water eventually. There's no way out of it. As long as people are can't even develop loving relationships with their mother and father, they can't deliver, or the cow and the bull, which represent the father and mother, and all other living entities, treat them with some respect because everyone is Krishna's eternal servant and we're all part of one spiritual family. If they can't do that, then they'll simply create this very, very unfortunate civilization. So again, we should see the present society. We should see what Govardhan Hill, what Govardhan Puja actually represents. It's not just some ordinary ceremony. It's the basis of human civilization. It's the basis of prosperity, real prosperity, and ultimately being satisfied with what Krishna gives us, which is good food. Coming from the cow and the bull, cow, the preparations, which actually will satisfy the mind. And when the mind's satisfied, we can have nice relationships with each other, and we can actually chant Hare Krishna blissfully, without any worries. And if our minds are not satisfied, it's usually because we don't eat properly. We don't breathe properly. We don't do anything properly, because we've created this horrible civilization where there's no fresh air, there's no, as I said before, they put on masks and deny even oxygen. They don't even want you to breathe oxygen. Supposedly you're going to get healthy by not breathing anymore. And then after you get sick, because you haven't breathed, then they give you oxygen. So Prabhupada once said, they've contaminated the air, they've contaminated the water, they've contaminated the food, and therefore there must be war. So we can't be happy with contaminated air, with contaminated water, with contaminated food, with contaminated ether, with contaminated relationships. And the only solution is not only to chant Hare Krishna, but to have an economic system where we can chant Hare Krishna in pure goodness, with a peaceful, satisfied mind. And that's the culture that Prabhupada introduced, that's the culture that Krishna introduced 5,000 years ago to his father. That we don't have to worship anyone but Krishna, and by worshiping Krishna, the whole Vedic civilization is there. Krishna was not against Indra, it was against Indra not fitting into the Vedic culture. And anything that doesn't fit into the Vedic culture is not into Krishna's culture, and anything that's not in Krishna's culture will not satisfy us or anyone else in any way, materially or spiritually. So we're not interested in some kind of quaint, you know, aborigine civilization, barbaric, primitive civilization. We're interested in actual civilization, where people are actually happy materially and spiritually. And the so-called material advancement is not happiness, it's actually creating all the misery that people are experiencing, physically, mentally, intellectually, and spiritually. And it's our business in this Hare Krishna movement to understand it and change civilization. Or as Prabhupada once said, that this Hare Krishna movement will save human society in its darkest hour. At least from my vision, it's getting a little cloudy. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Govardhan Pooj Ki Jai.